Hi, my name's Laura. I'm an addict. So Kat, I'm pretty sure, was at the very first NA meeting that I went to at Bear Creek. Anybody remember Bear Creek? A couple people. It doesn't exist anymore, and they tore the building down. I know. But Kat was one of those women that I needed to see because I was young, and there were not a lot of women back in those days. And to me, she always had a higher power in her life, and you could see that when she shared. It also seemed to me like she probably liked herself, and she loved herself even. And to me, I didn't really understand what that meant. She also still goes to meetings, which is admirable when you have a lot of clean time. She also tries really hard to get out of her comfort zone on a regular basis and do things that she's uncomfortable with and be aware of things and areas of opportunity, which I appreciate. And I've had the pleasure of being her sponsee sister for quite a few years, so I'm very grateful that she asked me to introduce her, and I'm excited to hear you share. I love you very much.
Hi, family. My name is Kat, and I'm an addict. Which one of these do I talk into? I don't either. Just pick one. It doesn't matter. I have a difficulty with decisions. First of all, I'm supposed to be here. I didn't even realize it was going to match my shirt. How freaking cool is that? Welcome to HACNA 15. So I have to tell you, this shirt I am wearing, I was going to dress really pretty for you, but I'm wearing this shirt because this shirt is from the very, very, very first HACNA, which you can see on the wall right over here, wherever, yeah, right there, which was in 1993, July 1993. I had a little over a year clean, and I was out of my freaking mind. So, you know, when I was going to turn a timer on, and I didn't, so somebody's just going to have to tell me when to shut up, okay? I'm really, really nervous, and I feel like, okay, God. So, I got clean in 1992. My clean date is 4/5/92, and that was after, thank you. It is not because I did anything. It is because God did everything. Man, I grew up the youngest of five, and I moved to Texas from California to a small town, and I always felt like I didn't belong, and I always felt like I didn't fit in. And even when I was hanging out with, I guess, what I thought were the cool kids, I still didn't fit in. And even when I was getting high and I was getting drunk and I was acting like a fool, I still felt like I didn't fit in. So no matter where I was, what I was doing, who I was with, I didn't feel like I fit in. And after my second divorce, and I lost custody of my kid, and I lost my house, and I met a guy in recovery. Now, I knew about recovery because my brother from back in the day, right? My oldest brother, he, you know, was doing the drug. I grew up with it, right? All around me, everybody was doing the same thing. So I knew about recovery, like for you, but not for me. And he would go away. And so that's all I knew about recovery. And so when I met this guy at work, when I was going through my second divorce, he was in recovery. And he would take me. And I'm like, yeah, okay, cool, cute boy. You know, I didn't think it was for me. I still thought it was for you. God was for you. Recovery was for you. I didn't see that any of it was for me. Thank you. I didn't see that any of it was for me. I didn't feel like anything good ever happened or anything good was ever going to happen, and I didn't deserve for anything good to ever happen. The choices that I made before I got here put me in harm's way because of the men that I put in my life, the places that I put myself into. There was, you know, it was just destructive life. It was just a destructive life. And so for me, even when I got here, it was like, you know, this was yours. I felt like I was on the outside of your circle, you know, and I heard keep coming back. And I mean, I didn't know that they were talking to me, but okay, you know, I'll keep coming back. And, you know, the first time that I tried recovery was not 4592. The first time that I tried recovery was January of 91. And I stayed clean for almost a year, but not in recovery, because I didn't know shit about recovery. It was yours. It wasn't mine. And I was in a very abusive relationship because that's what I knew. And when my higher power, the abusive relationship, said, hey, let's go ahead, and I was like, cool, because obviously I don't have a problem. I just stayed clean for a year. Why not? And then I guess that's really what God needed me to do, because that is when I realized, okay, obviously I can't do this on my own. And being in this abusive relationship was going to kill me, you know, and what I was doing to my kids, what I was teaching my kids, you know. My oldest son, his dad is in prison for killing somebody. So he grew up as a single kid. And, you know, it's like the things that I taught him, the things that he learned, the men that I put in his life. My second kid, I lost, from my addiction, I lost custody of him. And I always thought that was a good thing because I didn't want to teach him what I was doing. Well, come to find out, his dad was no better. I'm glad I didn't know that, you know, back in the day. You know, so when I got clean, I would stand on the outside of the circle. And people would talk about going to dinner after. And I would be like walking around and they're like, hey. And I'm like, really? You know, so I started kind of feeling like, okay, maybe somebody's noticing me. Maybe I do belong here or deserve to be here, or they have pity on me or something, you know. I learned that there is a difference in wishing for something and having hope for something. And when I was growing up, I would wish that I could, you know, get out of this abusive relationship, get out of the, you know, my mom and dad's house. My dad was an abusive person, but he was emotionally abusive. And I would wish that I could, you know, get in a car and drive away. I wished that I could do things. What I learned was wishing is something that's not tangible. Hoping is something that is tangible. Hoping is something that could possibly happen. You know, so when I got here and I learned that, you know what, you can do this, so I can see that it can happen, right? So it gave me hope that, okay, it does happen, so maybe it can happen. That's the hope. And then when I started working the steps and I started coming back and I started living recovery in my life, started making me feel hopeful. So there's a difference in hope and being hopeful. I didn't know that either. So when I started being able to change, you know, working the steps started changing who I was. So not only did I get clean, you know, I was in that abusive relationship. I stayed in that relationship until after I had a year clean. And like I said, my clean date is in April, May, June, July. 3 months after I turned a year was our first HACNA. I was not in that abusive relationship. Within those 3 months, I had gotten out of that abusive relationship. I don't know how. I really don't. It was God. It was you. It was something that helped me be able to walk away. I didn't walk away because he would go to jail. I would get him out. He would go to jail. I would get him out. You know, we played that bullshit. But, you know, it was like I had that hope that, you know what, maybe I cannot let him back in the door, right? And at some point, I didn't let him back in the door. You know, he would come and he would rip me off and he would steal and I would hide things and he was still using, you know? And I had hope that he would get clean. And I don't know if he ever did or not. Eventually, he moved away and went to prison for murder. So these are the guys I pick, right? I have two that are in prison for murder. These are the guys I pick. There's hope for me because I haven't picked one since, so yay. So, you know, I started working the steps and I started changing, right? And I started changing my outlook and who I was and the way I saw the world, because the way I saw the world when I got here, the world was very ugly, right? And people were, you know, to take things from you and to abuse you. And, you know, it's like you probably hung out with the same people I hung out with, right? I don't have to tell you about that. And so that's when I got here, I had to learn that, okay, maybe not everyone is like that. You know, and I would bring my kids to meetings because they were little and I was single and I didn't have a choice, you know, and we would hang out with everybody and somebody was like, whoa, don't let your kids just hang out with all these people. And I'm like, but why not? Because we're all here, right? Because we're all doing the same thing. Kat, you have to be smart about that. Just because this guy's here or this girl's here doesn't mean they're in the same mindset. That doesn't mean you can trust them. I was like, oh, dude, no shit. I didn't think about that, right? I was just thinking, hey, yay, we're all in recovery. So I had to learn from you guys how to raise my kids, to watch over my kids, you know? So you gave me hope that, you know, maybe I can be a better mom. Because, you know, I was talking to somebody today about the way my oldest son raises his son. And I was like, man, he didn't learn good from me. I didn't teach him well, you know. I was a shit parent, you know. I didn't know what I was doing. You know, my kids were 8 and 5 when I got clean, you know. So it was like, what the fuck? I don't know how to do this. And so you guys are the ones that were like, wait a minute. You can't let your kid do that. Why not? Okay, let me try something else. Because I didn't know what I was doing, right? That gave me hope that, okay, maybe I can learn from other people who knew what they were doing because they've done it, right? And then when I started seeing that change, I was hopeful that maybe I could be a better parent, that maybe my kids could be better kids. Because, you know, my oldest one, man, he did some shit. Anybody that was at the first HACNA, second HACNA, third HACNA, you remember my kids. Because they were the ones that were peeing off the balcony. They were the ones setting their hair on fire, you know. They were running around acting like little fools, you know. My kids grew up in these rooms, you know. And today, they are grown-ass men with their own kids, and I see the way that they are parents. Like I said, my oldest son, I really wish that he could parent better, but he just started becoming a single parent. And so he's learning the way I did, right? How to be a single parent. He's learning, you know? And there is hope that he can be a better parent. I have hope that, you know what? He's not going to teach his kids what I taught him because he's not in a place where I was. He grew up in recovery, you know? My youngest son eventually moved in with me when he was a senior in high school. And oh my God, that was crazy, you know? And he went through his addiction and it was insane. And thank God he ended up getting pregnant with somebody and ended up getting a great job. And he went through recovery. He's not in recovery now. But being a dad and having this job, I guess, gave him what he needs to stay away from drugs. I'm not saying he doesn't drink wine because he's not clean, but he also doesn't act the fool that he did before, you know? And so he learned something from watching me screw up all those years and try to get better, you know? He is a good dad. And, you know, he's learning how to be a good dad because his ex, I don't like saying baby mama, but that's what she is. They never got married, right? I call her my daughter-in-law because that's how I feel in my heart. She's a great mom. And so he's learning how to be a great dad because she's a great mom, you know? And because his dad wasn't a great dad. He didn't know how to be a great dad. I wasn't a great mom. So he's learning it from somebody, right? My kids grew up here, and I started learning how to be a better parent because I saw better parents. You know, and I would have people in my life tell me, you know what, your kids probably shouldn't do that. And probably at first I was like, F you, because I was very defensive and thinking, you know, my kids can do what the hell they want. Well, you know what, you're probably right. My kids probably shouldn't be acting like that, you know. I'm grateful I didn't know the things they were doing. I mean, Old Hugs, they would tell me now, at Old Hugs, there was train station or a train track. Mom, man, we used to go, we were like little, and we used to be outside and we'd be running up and down the train track. And, you know, I'm thinking, I didn't know that because I was doing recovery. Yay me. You know, it was like, did the best I could being a parent. I did the best I could being a parent. And I'm super grateful that you guys walked me through that, you know. And I talk a lot about being a parent because, to me, that's the most important thing I've done since I got clean. That's probably the most important thing I've done since I was born, right? Because before recovery, I just fucked up everything I did. Everything I was, everything was about getting high and hanging out with whoever had whatever, right? And then I got clean, I was a single parent, and now what, right? And, you know, it's like I didn't know what I was doing, and you guys gave me the hope knowing that, you know what, your kids don't have to act like that. They don't have to learn that. And you don't have to act like that. You can be better. You know what? You don't have to wear that stupid-ass, short-ass skirt that you walked in the room with. You can go put on some clothes, and maybe people can like you for who you are instead of you trying to get attention some other way. You know? And I was like, damn, okay. You know? Because when I got here, my self-esteem was so... I remember being at a meeting, and there was a lady who was like, wah, crazy loud, right? And I was like, I need her. Because I was like a fly on the wall, and I was so timid and so scared. And I walked up, and I gave her my number. I had already written down her number. And I walked up, and I gave her my number. And I said, can I give you my number? Will you be my sponsor? I don't need your number. You need my number. Okay. You know? And so I asked her to be my sponsor, and I realized she was crazy, and she didn't have the recovery I wanted. But it gave me the... For real, dude. But it gave me the in that I needed, right? Because it's almost like, okay, she's in recovery. She's in here. Now I belong because I got her, right? So now I'm inside. Now I don't need her anymore because she's crazy. And so I started learning from you guys. You know what? We don't have to stay. We can outgrow people, and that's okay. I've learned, you know, I've met people in here, and it's like, man, you're going to co-sign my bullshit? Yes, let's hang out. And then I would grow, and I'd be like, okay, you're still hanging out with me because you're co-signing my bullshit, and I don't want to act like that anymore. So I would change, and I'd hang out with other people that would call me on my shit, you know? And so, again, that's hopefulness that I can become a different person, you know. In recovery, I have lost. I'm a very emotional person, and when I think about the losses that I've had in recovery, it does make me very teary, right? And there have been times in my recovery that I thought, I can't. I just can't. I just fucking can't because it hurts so bad. You know, and you guys would hold my hand and you would tell me, yes, you can. And I would sit in meetings and people would be sharing. And I'd be, and I would just be sitting there thinking, fuck you, shut up, you're stupid. Thank you. Because I was so angry. I was so angry. And I didn't know that I was ever going to be able to get past that anger. I didn't know I was ever going to be able to get past that pain, you know. And today I know that my pain outward is anger because I can't, like, control that pain, and I don't want to feel that pain, so it's a whole lot easier to be like, fuck you, it's your fault, you know? And I don't have to act that way today. I can recognize that and know what it is, and I can work the steps on that shit, and I can get past that, you know? And, you know, pain is pain. It's part of life, you know? I mean, I've got some pain going on in my life right now. My youngest son hasn't talked to me in 3 fucking weeks. And I said a while ago, the best thing in my life is my kids, my family. Man, that hurts. Sorry. That hurts my heart. That hurts my heart big time. But all I can do is give him his space, pray about it, talk about it. And know that, you know what? I don't have to act out. I don't have to attack him. Because that's what I want to do. I want to act, you know, I mean, yeah, I want to act out and just tell him that he's acting like a stupid little baby ass. And I'm not going to do that because however he's feeling, those are his feelings, and I can't take that away from him, you know? I can't take his pain away from him. I can't take his anger. I can't take whatever. I can't make it anything that it's not, you know? All I can do is go, you know what? If I've wronged you, we can talk about it. But I don't even know. I can guess what it is, and I think I know what it is, you know. But it's his own bullshit, and I just have to let him deal with that. you know, because it's not mine, it's not my shit. You guys taught me a long time ago, this is my side of the street, and as long as my side of the street is clean, that's all, that's my business. If your side of the street's dirty, that's your business, you know? And sometimes that's really hard, because my side's not very far from your side. You know, it's like when I was growing up, and my sister's side was a freaking mess. I hated sharing a room with her, you know? Today, I would love to share a room with her. My sister died, like, in 99? I don't remember. It's been so long ago. She died from addiction. And that was some painful shit, man. Some painful shit. I suffer from depression, and I have since I got clean. And with that, I struggle with, okay, I'm clean, so I can deal with this. Until I can't. And then I fucking fall apart. And then I'm a loony loon. And then I go to the doctor and they're like, well, okay, let's try it again. And then I get off the medicine because I'm in recovery. I can deal with this. And then I'm a fucking loony loon. You know, and luckily I've had people in my life. My mom I used to be able to share with. My mom passed 5 years ago. And again, fucking pain, right? But in these rooms, what I've learned is mental illness and addiction are usually like this, you know? So for me to be able to share anything I am going through, there, I guarantee you there's somebody in this room that can go, you know what, hey, I got you, girl, you know? And that's why we share our shit, right? We share our shit, that way other people can go, thank you, yes, yes, now I get it, you know? Because when I got here, I always thought, man, y'all got it going on, and I am a fucking wreck. And I remember when I first got clean, I don't remember, I probably had a couple years, my sponsor was in the room, and she was sharing some dirty shit, man. She was a mess, and I was just like, oh, wow, pedestal down, you know? Don't put people on a pedestal, man, because we're human, we're people. It don't matter if you got a day or 33 years. We're fucking addicts in here, you know? And I am super, super grateful that all I have to do is be me right here. Dirty, messy, ugly, whatever it is, you know? I mean, I can guarantee you there are probably half the room in here that knows this book more than I do. They have less clean time than I do because I don't read this book that often. When I first got clean, I carried it around everywhere I went, and I was just like, I'm in recovery. People are like, you probably don't want to tell everybody that. I didn't get it. I didn't know, you know. And you know what's really cool? The other day I took the cover off because it was all tore up, and the other day I was at work, and I was sitting there, and I was reading my book, and this passenger, she walks by, she goes, are you a friend of Bill W? And I looked at her, I said, no, I'm a friend of Jimmy K. She was like, oh, cool. But, you know, she recognized the book. So I thought that was really cool, you know. We are each other's eyes and ears. And sometimes we are the only advertisement somebody out in the real world will ever see, you know. Sometimes people are very particular about their anonymity, and it's precious to them. My anonymity is like, fuck, I don't give a shit, right? I don't care because I don't care. There was only one time I ever cared about my anonymity, and it's because I was really afraid of my director, and I really thought that, oh, my God, if my director knew. Well, she fucking knew. And that's okay, you know? I mean, it's like the way I look at it is, you know what? If anybody out in the free world knows where I come from and who I am, then maybe they'll go, well, damn, girl, you're not the same person you were. How'd you do that? That's the hope that we give people, you know? And that's sometimes that's all I got, you know? Because, I mean, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, you know? I know that I get up and I go, okay, God, what now? You know, because God's the one in control. He is where I get all my everything, is God. That's where I get all my everything. God will put people in my life. I'll put people in my life. And the people I put in my life are probably the people that are probably not supposed to be in my life because, you know, I already told you who I pick, you know. People God put in my life are the people that I'm going to learn from. And sometimes learning from people can be good or it cannot be good. You know, I mean, sometimes those lessons are hurtful, painful lessons, but they're still lessons that we have to learn, right? That I have to learn. I don't know how I am doing on time, so if somebody, thank you. 8 minutes. Man, I got to tell you the gratitude that I have, man. If you're not new, you know what? We always talk about the newcomer, right? If you are new, the newcomer, you know what? I am grateful you're here if you're the newcomer. But you know what? If you're not the newcomer and you've been here for however fucking long you've been here, thank you for being here, you know? Because sometimes I'm the one in the room in fucking pain. And it doesn't have to be the newcomer that's in the room. It could be this girl with 33 years that is in fucking pain. And we sometimes get overlooked because, man, you've been clean. You know, you got it going on. Sometimes I don't know. Sometimes I don't got it going on. Sometimes I just need somebody to go, I got you. It's going to be okay. It is okay. You know, I have to be reminded of that. I need you guys, regardless of who you are, where you come from, to remind me who you are, where you are, is okay, you know? Because I'm just here to be a better person, you know? I'm just here to learn who I am, to not act the way I acted, to do the way I did. I don't want to treat people like shit. When I first got here, I did. I didn't give a shit. If I treated you like shit, you're stupid for hanging out with me. And I would tell you that. It's the way I looked at it. I mean, I thought honesty, right? That's what we're supposed to do. So I'm being honest and I'm telling you, you're stupid if you hang out with me because this is the way I'm going to treat you, you know? And then I learned that's not okay. Oh, I didn't know that, you know? So you guys have taught me and you continue to teach me. God teaches me on a daily basis, you know? I'm just a mess and it's like I am an imperfect human being trying to do the best that I can with what I have on a daily basis. I've made a decision for 33 years to not put anything in my body. I've made a decision to say, okay, God, now what? I've made a decision even when I don't want to do this, when I don't like you and I don't want to be around you and I want to say, fuck you, I still come. Because I've learned that this is my medicine. This is what keeps me coming back, you know? And sometimes I'll go to a meeting like, and then I'll just get there and it's like, and then when I leave, my heart is so full, you know? And I might not even hurt anything. It's just being there. My heart is so full, you know? And sometimes that's all it is. That's all we got. And sometimes that's all I need because I can go to sleep and I can wake up and say, okay, now what, you know? And I can treat people nice and they can treat me nice or not. It's whatever, you know? I don't have to treat people the way they treat me, you know? But the world's not an ugly place anymore, you know? The world is a beautiful place with beautiful people, you know? And if you don't know what hope is, look around you, you know? And you know what? There's not very many people here right now. Come back later, but come back tomorrow night, you know? And if you're not feeling the hope right now, come back tomorrow night. And if you don't feel it tomorrow night, man, grab me, grab somebody, you know? Because damn, we're here, you know? And this happens, and it's happening this weekend, and it's gonna be, you know, this is epic. I mean, I'm just saying, you know? If you don't know me, grab me and hug me. And if you know me, grab me and hug me, you know? Because hugs are magic, man. Hugs are magic. And I just, when I got here, I didn't want your hugs. I didn't want you. Stay away from me. And now, man, that is the best magic I can ever get. And when I'm hugging you for a long ass time, hopefully I'm giving you something, but I'm taking it. I'm taking what you got because I need that shit, you know? I got a lot of gratitude, and I'm super grateful that I'm here. I didn't get to come to the last HACNA, which is the only HACNA that I've missed in 33 years. You know, 32 really, because the first HACNA was 32 years ago. So I've been to every single HACNA except for one because I was on vacation, and dude, That was a really hard, do you want to go on a cruise to Alaska or do you want to go to this convention? And I was like, fuck, I don't know. I went to Alaska. But it was hard. It was, because I've been to every convention, you know? It was hard. So I'm super grateful that I'm able to be here tonight. And I'm super grateful that hope is the message. Because, you know, like I said, when we got nothing else, that's what we got. We got hope, you know? My mom used to tell me all the time, you know what? Until you take your last breath, there's hope. I have a nephew that has chosen to sleep on the streets in Montrose for the past 5 years. Fuck, man, that hurts my heart. You know? And there are some times that I think, that's it. And I remind myself, you know what? Till he takes his last breath, there's hope that he's going to make that call and say, you know what? I'm done. I'm ready to come home. You know? So I keep praying for him. I don't go see him anymore because it hurts my heart too bad. You know? But I still have hope for him, you know? And if you guys pray, pray for my nephew, because damn, I'm hoping he comes home, you know? I'm not hopeful, because hopeful means that it's happening. But I have hope, because hope means it can happen, you know? And it can. It's not a wish, it's a hope. And it can happen, you know? And it can happen for you. If it's not already happening, it can happen for you. So keep coming back. I love you. Thank you for letting me be here.
I'm an addict. My name's Herschel. I promised him I wouldn't cry, so I'm not going to. Don't cry. I was in Tyler, 1991, I think it was. This little Mexican fellow wallered into the meeting, and he was fresh out of prison. And he said, would you sponsor me? And I said, yeah, I'll sponsor you. And here in about, let's see, how many days is it? Maybe 2 weeks. He'll celebrate 34 years, is it? 35? He's done a lot of stuff for this fellowship. He's been here in Houston. He's done a lot of work. Come on up here and tell us your story. I love you. If you keep it short and sweet, you don't get a chance to cry.
My name's Ebony, and I'm an addict.
Ebony.
I'm so glad everybody burned off. That makes this a whole lot easier, man. But anyway, you that are still here, thank you for sticking around, because it's not about the speakers or how many speakers. It's about the convention, man. This is about the convention, and the convention theme, keeping hope alive in 2025, man. You know, that's what this whole thing is about. It's about a celebration of recovery. It's about a celebration of hope. It's about a celebration of our members and our committee and all these people, man. You know, that's what it's about, man, and stuff. You know, and I'm going to tell y'all what, man, I'm from Houston originally, but I didn't get clean in Houston, right? I got clean in East Texas, right? That's where I was living at that time, and that's where I got clean at, man. But I come back to Houston as soon as I could, man, you know? And when I moved to Houston, I found out, you know, in East Texas, there was one little old group, man. It was one little old Narcotics Anonymous group. That's all there was back in those days, man, you know, and stuff, you know. And I had to go to meetings because the parole board sent me to meetings, man. That's the only reason I went to meetings, was the parole board said I needed to go to meetings, right? And I said, okay. And they give me a little old list from the other fellowship, and I went over to the other fellowship. And I went to about 3 meetings, man. And after the 3rd meeting, a little old man got me after the meeting. He said, you know, there's a meeting across town that you might like. And I said, oh, really? I thought, shit, they're kicking me out, man, and stuff. And I said, really, what is it? And he said, it's a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And when he said Narcotics Anonymous, my ears kind of stood up. My ears are big anyway, but, you know. So I started going to the New Beginnings group of Narcotics Anonymous, right? But I really wasn't looking to get clean. I didn't believe that getting clean was possible. I didn't believe that it was possible for me, man, my type of a, dope fiend that I was. You know, I'd been to prison numerous times and all that. So I went to meetings to get my sheet signed, man. You know, and I tell people, I was sharing with somebody the other day, you know, when I talk about my original home group, New Beginnings, I tell people, man, you know, we met in this ratty old building, man, with a bayou kind of backed up, a big old ditch behind it, man. Windows broke out, carpet stunk like come out of hell or high water, man. You know, the chairs were all beat up and everything, and they drank the strongest damn coffee you've ever seen, man, you know, and stuff. And I tell people when I share about my original home group, I said, I shot dope in better places than that, man, you know, and stuff. And you know, and they were a motley crew, man, you know. But I didn't want to get clean, man. I had to go get my sheet signed, and that's the only reason I went to them meetings, man. You know, because I didn't have hope. I didn't have hope. Only thing I knew was I lived a certain way, and that's the way I was going to continue to use. I figured if I could just moderate a little bit, man, you know, and learn to moderate. And it was kind of, I was kind of blessed because in East Texas, in Tyler, I didn't know where there was a heroin connection, right? So I drank a little bit. I smoked a little weed, did a few other little things, man. And I came to meetings, and I got my sheet signed. And I came to meetings, and I got my sheet signed. And I came to meetings, and I got my sheet signed, man, and stuff. And I did that, man, and I did that from early 1990 until I decided to get clean in October of 91. So almost 2 years, man, I came to meetings not trying to get clean. They never run me off. I never really went real loaded. You know, I would maybe get a buzz or something before I went or something, you know, and stuff. But they never run me off, man, you know, because I didn't possess hope. And I'll tell you this day, man, hope was not something I was looking for. Hope was not something I thought I could gain, right? But, you know, there's a remarkable thing that happens in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. We come to meetings and we listen or we don't want to listen, but yet it seeps in. The message of hope begins to seep in as we fill those seats and we sit in those seats for a period of time. And I believe the message of hope began to seep into me in spite of my belief system about myself as an individual addict, man, you know. And I had a friend when I had been clean a couple of years ago. He told me, we were talking, and he said, Ebony, what is hope? And I said, man, I don't know. He said, hope is a vision beyond our present circumstances. That's what he told me. And I thought that was a very remarkable answer, man. A vision beyond the circumstances I find myself in currently, right? And I took hold of that, man. I took hold. When I decided to get clean, I took hold. I let that hope. See, addicts have been planting the seed in my heart for a little while, right? Almost 2 years. But I hadn't let that seed of hope take hold. And when I made the decision to get clean, that seed began to germinate. I think that's a botanist or whatever they call them people to do plant. Who them people are, right? I think that seed then began to germinate, or maybe it was already germinating or whatever, right, you know, and stuff. And I began to learn to stay clean, right? And I began to learn how to work the steps, and I began to learn how to make 90 meetings in 90 days and not worry about getting my sheet signed, right? Because hope began to take hold. Hope began to motivate me. But there really wasn't much. The hope was, can I stay clean another day? Can I stay clean and not do some messed up behavior, right? Because I could act out, and I had a lot of anger and all that other stuff. Could I stay, you know, clean another day and not hit somebody in the mouth or something, you know, and stuff? And so there was that little bit of hope of staying clean one more day and living a bit differently for one more day, right? And I attended a lot of meetings in my first few years of recovery, man. I was very, very blessed that the New Beginnings group had noon meetings. They had 8 o'clock meetings. They had 6 o'clock meetings. They had
women's meetings. They had candlelight meetings. So I was able to saturate myself with recovery, thoughts of recovery, and hope, right? And I'm so blessed that Kat got up here and shared, man, because I thought, well, I'm not taking my book. I'm not going to beat them up with literature tonight, right, and stuff. I said, you know what? I'm going to give them maybe something, maybe. Y'all might correct me on this. I'm not going to hit them with literature. I'm going to give them something that may be just as powerful, and that's called experience, right? Because today, I've got the books, right? I can quote some of the books, not so much anymore since I've gotten old, but anyway. But I can quote the book, but I can give you something that there's a certainty about, and that's experience, right? And I was listening to my beautiful friend Kat sharing, and I said, you know what? I think the first thing I hoped for was to get a chance to know my daughter, right? Besides the staying clean, was to get a chance to meet and know my daughter. And for those of you who have heard me tell my full story before, y'all know that in 1987, I almost murdered her mama and my mother-in-law. Right? And of course, I went to prison another time on that case, right, you know, for attempted murder, right? But I'm the only kid I got, and so early in my recovery, I said, I wish someday I could meet my daughter. I hope someday I could meet my daughter, right? And that happened, man, early. In fact, when the first times I come to Houston around 97, I came to the first Hackney in 98, right, and stuff. And I was scared to come back to Houston, man, because it seems like every time I come to Houston, somebody fronts me some dope, man. They see me at the grocery store, the supermercado, the taqueria, and they want to give me quarter ounce, or eight ball, or half ounce, or something. Get on your feet, brother. You know, that was my prior experience coming from incarceration. So, but anyway, I got a chance to meet my daughter, man. That hope was fulfilled, right? And, you know, I have a God box. I don't know if y'all ever heard of a God box. They don't talk about them much anymore, right? But I have a ceramic God box. My first sponsor, Herschel was my second sponsor. My first sponsor's wife had a ceramic shop. And she made God boxes. And she made me a God box. It's got my name on there. It's got the Serenity Prayer on one side, Third Step Prayer on the other side, an NA logo. And the first thing I ever put in my God box was my daughter. I wrote her on the list, and that was the first thing I ever put in my God box, man. And I still have the God box. Luckily, I haven't broken in almost 34 years, right? You know, but you know, hope was not something I possessed. Hope was something that was bestowed upon me, the fellow members of Narcotics Anonymous. By coming to meetings regularly, right, they shared their hope with me. They passed on their hope with me, right? And over the years of being clean, man, hope has continued to be shared with me, man. In times of distress, in times of difficulty, in times of illness, or whatever, times of divorces, right, because I've had several divorces, you know, and stuff. I was thinking, as Kat was sharing, I remember when I was doing the treatment for hepatitis C, right? And nowadays they have these miracle drugs, man. Back in those days, they didn't have miracle drugs. They had this shit called, the name just slipped my mind, but it was interferon. And you had to shoot this shit up, man, you know, and take these pills every day, man. And I thought, man, I don't know if I can do that, man, you know. And I don't know if that stuff's going to work for me, man, and stuff. And I called my grand sponsor, a guy named Max was my grand sponsor, and I called him up, man. I said, you know what, man, if this shit don't work, man, I'll just go ahead and die. And he said, man, you ain't going nowhere till your job here is done. And I said, what? He said, you ain't going a damn place until your job here in earth's done. And I said, shit, I wish I wouldn't have called him, man, you know, and stuff, because he had done the interferon, and there was a lot of members that had the experience, the strength, and the hope of being able to survive hepatitis C, right, you know, and stuff. And so that hope was shared with me, man, and I continued to follow that regimen, man, and do that damn ugly medicine that made you feel terrible, man, every week. In fact, I was thinking a while ago, listening to Cat Sheeran, I was thinking, I went to go speak at the Northern California Convention, man, in 2004. And I remember I had to pack that little shit in my bag, man, you know, and stuff. And I went up there, the convention, and after the Friday night speaker, I remember I had to go back to my room, man, and get in there and pull that shit out, man, and draw up some and hit. You would do it in the leg or your stomach. Some of y'all have done it, know that, man, you know. But anyway, I did that because people give me hope, man, you know, and stuff, you know. And that's what we have. That's what happens here. I'm going to probably ramble a little bit. Somebody has to tell me the time and whatever, man. But you know what? Keeping hope alive in 2025 is real great, man, you know. I'm going to tell you something. I wasn't clean very, very long when they got me involved with service work, man. You know, they got me involved with being the GSR and opening the meetings and emptying ashtrays and all that other shit, man. And then they coerced me to go in the area, right, and stuff, and slicked up and got me to go to area, man. And I heard about H&I, right? And, you know, because I spent a lot of my life in penal institutions, I said, that sounds right up my alley, man, you know, and stuff. And I was thinking of Kat saying she's had that T-shirt so long. I was looking at this weekend, and I normally don't wear NA T-shirts, man. Very rarely. I hadn't bought an NA T-shirt in 18 years probably, man. And the reason being, they don't make them with pockets. See, back in the day, they made them with pockets. And I said, let me go up in my bag and pull out an old shirt, man, see if I can, if it ain't rotted out. And I found three different T-shirts for this weekend, and I washed them up, man, and stuff. And I decided to wear an H&I T-shirt, man, you know. But I was noticing something, man. Back in those days, they made them from pre-shrunk cotton. And they had these really thick collars on them, man. They made the things that they were supposed to endure, man. You know, this one here's endured since 1998, almost, you know, and stuff. But it's kind of like our recovery, man, and our hope. Hope is something that's given to us that can endure, that it can last a long time. Hope is something you don't have to lose. You might get discouraged. You might feel downtrodden. You might suffer some major depressive disorder, been there, done that, right? But if you'll come to meetings, if you'll call your sponsor, if you'll talk to your support group, man, hope will be bestowed upon you again, man, you know? And one of the things I wanted to talk about is H&I, right? When I got involved with H&I, and I was involved with H&I for many, many years, man, it's like I was trying to share hope. And I would go into them penal institutions to share hope. And one of the ways I keep hope alive is to share it. When I share it, it almost seems like it just begins to expand and blossom some more and all that. So in order to keep hope alive, I need to share it. I need to give it away. I can't just keep it for myself, right, you know? And stuff. And that's the thing for me, man, is hope. That vision beyond my present circumstances. I need to, you know, I don't have an official service position nowadays, man, and stuff, you know. And I avoid area like the plague and stuff. But I go to plenty of meetings, and I go to certain meetings, man, and all that, you know. And when I go to meetings, if somebody says they've got 90 days or something, I see somebody that I've never seen before, I feel it's my responsibility to capture them, right? And you know how the newcomers are, newer people are. They close the meeting, they're skating out the damn door, man, you know? And I feel like it's my responsibility to skate my ass out there after them, right? In fact, 2 weeks ago, I called a guy over. It's a Hugs meeting. He was all tattooed up with them colored tattoos and shit, you know, and some newer type people, you know, new age type people, you know. And I called his ass after the meeting, man, and I said, hey, man, you know, where are you from, blah, 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 and started talking with him and all that, and we started sharing a little bit, and he said, you know, I would like to get involved with the hospitals and institutions. I must have said something or somebody. And I said, really? I said, you need to go to area. He said, when's area? He said, ask me when area. And I said, well, I think it's on Zoom. He said, well, I don't like Zoom. And I said, will you go to Zoom one goddamn time and find out who the H&I facilitator is? And then you can try to get involved with H&I, right? He said, well, why can't you? If you want to be involved with H&I, maybe you can sacrifice yourself to get on a damn Zoom meeting, right, and stuff. And man, I don't know about you guys, but that's just the way I am, man. I don't know. I feel like I have a responsibility to Narcotics Anonymous, man, right? You shared with something with me that allowed me to continue to live and to live clean and to learn new behaviors and to become a responsible, productive member of society. And I feel like I have the responsibility, man, to give that back to other people, man, to let them know no matter where you find yourself at in your addiction, no matter where you find yourself at in your recovery, right, there is a vision beyond your present circumstances, right? There is that hope, right? And like Kat said, man, if you don't have any hope, stick around. If you don't have any hope, grab me or Kat, man. You know, grab Tony M. Grab my buddy from San Antonio, you know, Raymond, man, you know, and stuff. Grab hold of Big Hardy. Grab hold of somebody. Grab hold of Herschel, man, you know, and stuff. We will share the hope that you're seeking, and we may even share some of the hope that you ain't seeking. Because sometimes you may want me to commemorate with you so you can have an excuse to go use or something. And I'm going to tell you right now, partly it's not happening with me, right? You ain't getting away, right, and stuff. I'm going to try to share that blessing of hope with you, man, and stuff. And I don't know where I'm at on time. Somebody tell me where I'm at on time. I got 10 minutes? Lord have mercy, man. Where's that bottle of water at, man? There's a lovely lady. I haven't met her yet. There's a lovely lady going to come on after me, man. And stuff. Like I said, I haven't met her yet. I know she's a lovely lady because she's a member of Narcotics Anonymous, man. And she's probably been around a while, and she comes from a great group, I think, maybe A&K or something. And so I'm going to try to leave some time. And she just put me in a spot, man. You know, it's not like I ain't been in the spotlight before. So, but you know what, man? I'll probably end up rambling, but you know what, man? It's always a pleasure for me when somebody asks me to do something for a convention. My friend Lorraine used to say, it's an honor and a privilege, right, and stuff, you know. And it always is. When somebody asks me to do something in one of these things, man, to come up and share, do a workshop or whatever, man, you know, it's honor and a privilege, man, that would not be bestowed upon me if it weren't for you guys. See, you guys are the miracle workers, right? You guys are the miracle workers. You're just like a bunch of farm workers, man, that you hit the fields and keep going, man, you know, and getting the shit taken care of, man, and stuff. And all the people on the committee are that same way, man. This is quite a chore to put on, man. But they wanted to share that hope was alive in 2025, man, and stuff, you know. And I'm really, really grateful for that. I'm still pissed off at them because they didn't give me one of them super fancy bags, you know. When I went to registration, I said, how about them bags? They said, oh, that's for free. I said, my ass pre-registered. And they gave me this other bag. I gave it away to some lady a while ago. But anyway, I said, I don't know, man. I know my daughter today. My daughter will be 38 in December. I go to their home, see my grandkids. I've been blessed and able to do that, man, and stuff, you know. I had a career. I'm retired now. My job is mainly watching Netflix or Amazon Prime and eating Bluebell ice cream, you know. But I wouldn't be able to do that, man, if it weren't for the hope that's been given to me, man. You know, that I said I didn't want to beat y'all up with literature, man. One of the thoughts I had about hope and y'all giving me hope, man, did anybody read the Just for Today this morning? It talks about character defects, but it's the opening portion that really hit me this morning when I thought about getting up here and sharing. It says, seeing ourselves in others. See, that's what happened to me when I came to these meetings long before I was ever clean. I saw myself in others, and it ignited that little spark that maybe I could do what they were doing, was quit using drugs and find a better way to live, right, and stuff, you know. And so when I read that this morning, I said, that's what this whole thing's about. Seeing ourselves in others. I see myself in you people when I come to meetings. And sometimes you see yourself in me, man, you know, and stuff. And so, you know, I just know that's the remarkable transformation that happens in our meetings. We see reflections of ourselves. We see hopeful possibilities. You know, when Herschel, when I elected Herschel, it'd be my second sponsor after my first sponsor relapsed. I saw, so they used to say, get a sponsor that has something you liked, right? Sponsor, Herschel had a beautiful wife and a nice car, man, right? And stuff. And I thought, if I get him as a sponsor, hopefully I can have a beautiful wife and a nice car, you know? I hate to tell you all today, I've had three beautiful wives, but, you know, but anyway. And I say they're beautiful. They were all beautiful, man, and stuff, you know. But I've rambled on long enough. I'm going to take my little bitty bottle of water with me since I done broke the label. But I'm going to give you something. You know, I don't know if y'all know, but last week on September 20th, there was a spiritual principle a day. And I thought about it when I thought about coming up here and sharing. It's called Hope Around the World, right? In that day, it talked about Narcotics Anonymous offers hope to addicts around the world, regardless of any real or imagined differences that might separate us, right? That wasn't the part that got me. The part that got me was at the very bottom, and this is my message. This is my hope. This is my aspiration. This is what I hope to be the epitome of in my recovery today, right? And epitome is kind of a big word, but be the prime example of something, right? And it says, NA's message of hope is heard around the world. I am an integral part of this whole. Today, I strive to receive that message from whoever offers it, and to take responsibility for carrying it to whoever needs it. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Scotty, and I'm an addict. My clean date is 2-8-1991, right? And I'm truly grateful. To introduce Tanya T, you know, man, you know, I remember when 2020, when the pandemic hit, and we had to go on virtual, right? And you know, I was doing a whole lot of meetings on virtual. We had to go to virtual, and so you know, everything opened up and everybody went back into the rooms, but you know, we stayed on virtual because of my job and all that. It's just a little bit here. And Tanya, I met Tanya, you know, I think it was three years ago. Is it 3 years ago? 4 years ago? And you know, and I'm the facilitator of the virtual at Alive and Kicking at my home group. And you know, you got to find your niche, right? You find your niche, and that was my niche, you know, being on virtual. And so I'm the facilitator, and she come on the side of me and help me, right? We facilitate 12 meetings a week on the virtual platform, And I'm so glad that Narcotics Anonymous, accept virtual as a regular meeting, right? You know, they accept that as a regular meeting. So we facilitate 12 meetings a week for my home group, Alive and Kicking. And Tanya came on the side, and she helps me, man. She helps facilitate these meetings. And got to meet people from all over the world. You know, what we do on virtual. And so Tanya, I ain't going to take no more time. But, man, Tanya is all about service. And she works so hard when it comes to service, man. And so I'm grateful to have you to help me facilitate, like I say, 12 meetings a week, every week, you know. So thank you, Tanya. Come on, Tanya.
Hey, family, my name is Tanya, and I am a grateful recovering addict. My clean date is 1/23/1997, and my home group is Alive and Kicking here in Houston, Texas. Woohoo! All right, so I got to do Miss Devin and Miss T.
Oh, I forgot.
All right, y'all. So one of the things that when Herschel asked me to come and share, he talked about my topic being hope in Houston. That's what he talked about, right? And I say, well, you better have some pom-poms. And he said, you need some pom-poms? I say, yeah, you need some pom-poms, you know? And I'm so grateful for Herschel's service because he actually brought those pom-poms in because I told Herschel, you know, when I was younger, my mother didn't have enough money for me to be the cheerleader, you know, at the school. You know, you had to have so much money, right, to be the cheerleader at the school. But that was a recreational center in my neighborhood. And I became the cheerleader at the recreational center in the neighborhood. And so I talk a little loud, you know. Sometimes I cry when I share. You know, sometimes I even cuss when I share. And sometimes I get mad when I share, right? And I get mad at the disease, right? You know, and so before I just get off into Hope in Houston, I want y'all to help me. When I say Hagner, y'all say 15. Y'all ready? I told you I used to be a cheerleader. All right? So when I say Hagner, y'all say 15. Hagner! 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 Woohoo! All right, now that I got that out the way. So, you know, again, I'm a very grateful recovering addict. And when I think about the hope that narcotics has given me, I think about our message, right? I think about our primary purpose that say an addict. Any addict can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. It says our message is hope and a promise of freedom. And I got to tell you that Narcotic Anonymous gave me that. Y'all gave me that freedom. And as I listened to, I'm going to say Kay and Ebony, because I don't want to pronounce her name wrong. As I listened to them share, I thought about, you know, what Narcotic Anonymous gave me. What is it that I wanted? You know, because it seemed like everything that I wanted, I could never get. You know, so I stopped wanting because it became so disappointing, you know, and I started losing hope. You know, step one talks about that. It talks about hitting bottom, how we get into despair, how we was in despair when we came in here, in a hopeless state of mind, and that's how I came in here. I came in here with a hopeless state of mind. I didn't think that I was going to get my children back. I didn't think that I was going to get my husband back. I didn't even think that I was going to be a productive member of society anymore. You know, I thought that the only place that I fitted in was in the dope house. I ain't even fit in there because when I got too high and I started running into walls and picking up off their floor, they say, she got to go. And then if I got too high and I started saying, God going to save us all, they say, you sure got to go. But Narcotic Anonymous, the hope that Narcotic Anonymous gave me that I wanted, it was okay for me to want some things in here. Yeah. But the first thing y'all taught me was to do is stop using. Yeah. Y'all taught me how to stay stopped. I'm talking about how I believed that I was going to be using for the rest of my life. I remember standing in my room in the kitchen, and I used to say to myself, man, I'm going to use for the rest of my life. My auntie used, my mama used. You know, when I was in treatment, they had us to make, not a family tree, they had us to make some kind of board where you say what the daddy's side of the family and the mama's side of the family. And by the time I got to my mama's side of the family, everybody got high. Everybody got high and everybody got drunk. So I thought that's the way my life was going to be. And then as I began to read the liturgy, you know, the liturgy say that was my disease all the time. My disease was trying to keep me there, was trying to keep me in that hopeless state of mind to tell me that I was going to never, ever get better. But then I came across H&I. Woo-hoo, H&I! Coming into those treatment facilities. And I always tell newcomers, and I tell anybody, you know, people come in and out. They come in and out. I don't talk about them because people using that 29, 39, 30 year. People using. Yeah. People using. People are giving up their clean time. Right? So I don't talk about people because that once go out, I could be that person. Right? So I always tell people, I say, I done got so bold in this phase of my recovery that if you got to go to treatment, go to treatment. Because y'all told me to be very vigilant about my recovery. Y'all told me to change people, places, and things. Y'all the one gave me the hope. Y'all told me to change people, places, and things. And guess what? Y'all ain't even named those people, places, and things. And even if that included my family members. And I tell this story all the time. I say, you know what? I knew I was very, very serious about my recovery when the auntie that introduced me to drugs, right? The auntie that introduced me to drugs died. And you know how they have a repast. You know, people go and eat after the, you know, the funeral and everything. And I was 1,000 miles away, 800 miles away from home. I lived in Houston. But you know, when people die, people take people on back home to bury them. So we went on back home to bury her. And let me tell you about Cousin Bobo's house. I don't know what cousin y'all got. But I got a Cousin Bobo. That everybody, he gonna always say, y'all can have the repast at my house. And I knew then, when I got in that car with my children, and I came all the way back to Houston, and I did not go to Cousin Bobo's house, I knew that I heard y'all. Because y'all told me to be very vigilant about my recovery, and y'all told me to protect my recovery. Y'all told me don't hang around people, places, and things. Y'all gave me the hope. And I kept coming to meetings. So every family gathering, I didn't go to the family gathering. Matter of fact, I didn't even care if you thought, I didn't even care if my family members thought I was using. Because I hung around y'all. We was answering phones on Memorial Days. We were hanging out in the meetings, cooking food, fellowshipping, playing cards, dominoes. I was bringing my kids. And I was very protective of my kids. You couldn't be in my kids' faces too long. Oh, I didn't play that because, see, I was molested. And so I was very protected about my kids, and I got beautiful daughters. Although they decided they wanted to be lesbians, y'all taught me how to deal with that one too. I'm talking about the hope that I received in the fellowship. I'm talking about the love of the fellowship. How y'all told me, how I watch y'all, I listened to y'all. I heard you, Miss K, when you talked about them parenting issues. I had parenting issues, but y'all gave me hope. Because my kids were little red kids, right? They real bright, skinny kids, right? And so I couldn't whoop them like my mama whooped them. See, because when I grew up, we would have to go get our own switch. We had to go get our own belt, right? And back then, when they whoop you, you better not call and tell nobody. Or you're going to get a whooping again. So I was sitting in the meeting. I'm trying to tell you how y'all gave me hope. See, I was also that parent that I would always make my children, when they go to school, to wear long sleeve shirts in the summertime. Right? And so y'all told me. Listening into a meeting, this is why I say recovery happens in our meetings. So if I don't come to the meetings, and we always say, listen to learn and learn to listen. Well, how much are you really listening?
How much am I really identifying with? Or do my disease keep me in denial, right? Trying to keep me in shame as if though that don't apply to me. When that lady said about them long sleeve shirts on her children, I knew that applied to me. So I listened for the hope. I listened to what she did. And what she said was, is I go to parenting classes. That's what she said. She said, I went to parenting classes. So guess what? I stood in line like everybody else did. And I said, you said you go to parenting class. What parenting class you go to? And she started telling me, that's what we do around here. We help one another around here. That's the what the step one say. We ask for help. We don't care how much you use, who your connections were, or what you done in the past. We say we want to know what is your problem and how we can help. But disease keeps us in so much denial and we won't ask for help. So y'all gave me that hope, right? So I started learning how to parent my kids. And I kept asking the teachers, I said, why they listen to y'all and don't listen to me? Why when they get home, they be doing everything? They say, because we give them clear, precise instructions. I said, what you say? Because I was telling the kids to go outside, but then when I go outside, they cross the street, I was whooping the kids. And in parenting class, they say, you need to learn how to tell them. See, I'm talking about the hope, how y'all taught me how to talk to my children. And y'all say, the parenting class say, when you tell them to go outside, tell them you can go outside, but don't go across the street. The literature says even the most simplest form of the answer is so simple. I couldn't think of it. So I needed y'all to help me. And y'all helped me. And then as I kept coming, I started realizing I was missing something. What was I missing? I was missing a sponsor. I was missing somebody to help guide me. See, it wasn't so much about all the other stuff. I was learning how to stay stopped because I didn't know how. But as I kept coming, y'all taught me how to stay stopped. So y'all started saying, and I heard it over and over and over again, and anything get on your nerves, probably need to take a look at it. So I had to take a look at it. Y'all say, get a sponsor. I said, okay. Now my first three sponsors, nope, wasn't going to be able to do it. One owned the snake and wanted to do some step work at a house, and I wasn't going to be able to do the snakes. I'm sorry. Y'all told me that I was responsible for my recovery. I was not responsible for my disease. So I had a choice. I ain't got to go over her house because she got snakes. She said, we going to put them up. Well, she wasn't talking about no puppet. She was talking about a snake. But I wasn't stopping getting a sponsor. So this brings me to my home group. I went to my home group, and there were two ladies that were sitting in the meeting. They were sitting outside the meeting because at that particular time, we were on McGowan, and when you walk in there, there was a room here, and then you go through the doors. That's where the meeting was. And they were sitting outside that door doing step work. So I started praying to my high power. I said, which one of them that I need to ask to be my sponsor? I'm talking about the hope. Y'all allowed me to see the hope. And I asked one of them to be my sponsor. And she became my sponsor. And one of the things I always tell people is that service work comes through sponsorship. You know, my sponsor taught me how to do service work, didn't want to do it. People was fussing and arguing too much, rude, nasty, mean, too much. Right? And especially when I hadn't took a look at my character defects yet. Because, see, the only thing that I thought my problem was drugs. See, I didn't think that I had a Tanya problem at all, right? And so I remember I would come in, and I would get ready to do service work, And she would be on all kind of committees. And I would tell her, nope, I ain't going to be able to do that. I said, I'll be in there. I was treating service work like it was work. I would clock in about 4 o'clock, and about 6 o'clock, I wouldn't care what she had left to do. I was going home. But my high power had another thing for me. Because I got to tell you, over the last 4 years of my life, my high power have allowed me to be of service on this magnitude that I understand what selfless service means. Now I understand what it means to give back which was so freely given to you. In order for me to keep anything I got to give it away. And that's the hope that y'all showed me, right? So another thing that I learned about hope that y'all gave me was how to become a productive member of society. Because I didn't know how to be a productive member of society. I came in these rooms and I was married for a very, very long time. I was married for 32 years. And I remember a lady asked me, to my girl, how the hell you walk out of a marriage after 32 years? Well, let me just tell you this. Anytime I feel like I'm going to put my recovery at jeopardy, I will leave your ass too. Because y'all taught me how to be vigilant about my recovery. See, y'all told me that if I forget, that I'm doomed to repeat. And what I knew was, I knew that that man did not get me clean. I knew that it was a power greater than that got me clean. And y'all was the power that was greater than. And it wasn't him. So when I found myself, the only way to put up with, the only way to tolerate is, and let me tell you something about my disease. My disease didn't say, Tanya, go straight to your drug of choice. My disease said, well, let's go do some pills this time. Yeah. Let's substitute one for another. Yeah. But see, I had been around y'all long enough because y'all taught me how to identify my disease. And I said, oh, I ain't going to be able to do it. I said, I ain't going to be able to do it because, see, again, I had to remember my last high. Y'all told me to always play the tape. See, y'all taught me this. Everything that I'm saying and doing, y'all taught me how to do this. But I had to hang around, y'all. Oh, let me go back. I had to stop using. Because in Narcotic Anonymous, it says, in this program, I'm in step 2. In this program, the first thing we do is stop using. We don't have no intermittent leave. So that's why we used to say, oh, and not even interrupted on the weekends. That means we clean even through the holidays. Now I understand. But I didn't understand at first. But guess what? I was so scared I stayed around y'all, me and my kids. You could have said whatever you wanted to say. She stuck up. She did. You don't know what I was dealing with when I left and went home. And I show back up again. I always say, ain't nobody got to tell me what time my home group starts. See, tradition one tells me to when I come in here to be a part of a group. And the reason why it tells me to be a part of a group so somebody can get to know me. I got to give y'all an opportunity to get to know me so when I'm off one day or I'm sick one day, because we do be sick, and I'm real grateful that we ain't all sick on the same day. Because if we was all sick on the same day, shit, we all be in trouble. You know? So keeping hope alive. Being a productive member of society. You know, I used to steal. Sure did. My first time I stole was out of a Mr. Miller store, some noun laters. Yep. I stole some noun laters out of Mr. Miller store because I didn't have enough change left after giving him all them dollar food stamps so I could buy my mama some cigarettes. Because we used to have to trade food stamps in for money. And there wasn't no money left for the noun laters. So as soon as Mr. Miller turned his back to give my mama cigarettes, I stole them noun laters.
And that carried on inside of me for a long time. Because what I learned in this program is that my addiction came long before I picked up. See, had I not been in the meetings, had I not been in literature study, and let me tell you something, newcomer, literature study is important. Because, see, my disease don't want me to know about that literature. My disease don't want me to know about what my predecessors had to say in that book. Because my disease want to keep me in denial. And so I was working. And I'm trying to tell y'all how I began to develop hope in Narcotic Anonymous, where some of the things that I did long before I picked up through the step working process that I no longer had to do it no more. See, I used to didn't want to say that because I didn't want you to think that I think I've arrived. Oh, I know I haven't arrived because at any given time, I'm subject to jump out the bushes on you. You know, but it's through this program that y'all taught me that it's okay for me to embrace my imperfections. See, I also grew up as the oldest child, and I had to do everything right. Let me tell y'all, my mama whooped me because I put the hamburger meat in the water. See, I didn't know that the hamburger meat went in the frying pan. So from that day forward, I always had to do things right and correctly, even if I didn't know how. But then I come in here and y'all told me, I'm talking about how y'all gave me some hope. How y'all told me, Tanya, you're human. You're going to make some mistakes. Give yourself a break. But don't use. Yeah. I'm talking about it doesn't matter how much clean time I got. That don't exempt me from the challenges of life. That don't mean that people not going to die. I've had a husband to die in this process. Yes, I was depressed. Yes, I was in isolation and I didn't want to talk to nobody, but I didn't use. Because y'all told me that I don't have to use no matter what. There's a portion in the literature that says that one clean day is a successful day no matter what's happening. Yeah, I moped around the house. Yeah, grief was using me like a bobblehead. Yes, I thought those people was going to have to come and get me and put me in that white jacket and make me hug myself. But all I can remember is what y'all told me. Don't use, no matter what. And when I came up out of that depression and when I came up out of that grief, I've been telling people everywhere I go about no matter what, don't use. If anybody die, don't use. If you lose a job, don't use. Even if you go move to from state to state, don't use. Because y'all taught me no matter what. See, that's the hope y'all gave me about not using. And then let's talk about the difficulties that we deal with in the fellowship. The communication problems with individuals. Because we all don't communicate the same. Because of our thinking and our perception. And it all depends on where I'm at that day. Because you can say hey to me in a very nice way. And I probably took it, why she got to say hey like that? I'm talking about how important y'all have taught me that this program work. And here's the thing that Narcotic Anonymous made good on for me. Narcotic Anonymous gave me a promise. It didn't tell me that I was going to get my cheering back. Nope. 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 Didn't tell me I was going to get stuff. Nope. There's some benefits. As long as I don't use, there's some benefits that's going to happen. But Narcotic Anonymous told me I don't never, ever, ever, ever have to use again. That's the promise.
So when it come to clean time, I wouldn't care if don't nobody celebrate my clean time. I'm going to celebrate clean time. Oh, I hear you. Clean time don't equal recovery. With all that clean time, why they acting like that? That's how it started off. It started off with 1 day, 2 day, 3 day, all the way till we got 30 days and we was cheering for each other. And now we get 30 years and then nobody talking like, girl, she got 30 years and she acting like that. I am so grateful that Narcotics Anonymous don't celebrate recovery. But it celebrate clean time. So that's why we still make noise for clean time. Because y'all told me don't use no matter what. And I done had a whole bunch of no matter what moments. So let me tell y'all about how you steal, right? You know, the program teaches us about, tells us, this again, newcomer, you're going to hear me say this all the time, literature development study is very, very important. Step study meetings is very, very important. Tradition study meetings is very, very important. If you're in service, concept study is very, very, very important. That's why we arguing so much. Everybody trying to do the same task. Struggling over the position. It's a whole lot to do in Narcotics Anonymous. There's a lot to do. Seven Concepts says to be a part of the NA service team. We're part of a team. Show up. Make yourself visible. See what you can do. I show up on my job. What would you have me to do? So why can't I show up in Narcotics Anonymous and say, what would you have me to do? And literally even say that we see people that don't even get along will come together and help a newcomer. So why I can't come together for the common welfare of my group? Oh, I forgot. It all depends on who doing it. Now, literature doesn't say that. It says anonymity. No face. It doesn't matter who's doing it. Not the most popular person. Not the sponsorship family. Not the favoritism. Not the person that's most involved. Not the person with the most information. I'm in the literature. And the only reason I can speak like this is because I go to the step study meetings. I'm learning more about this program and I'm learning how to apply it to my life. I live this thing. Y'all gave it to me. Y'all showed me. Listen, I came in here, I needed guidelines. Yeah. My disease told me anything goes. You can do whatever you want to do, whenever you want to do it. And then fooled me and told me there wasn't no consequences. That's a lie. There is consequences. So let's go back to this stealing thing. So, you know how we justify and rationalize a lot of things? I did this because of this, and this is why I did it, and justify. I can't do that no more. My recovery, in this phase of my recovery, I can't justify and rationalize the wrong that I do today. I can't do it. I got to do better. And I do better each and every day. So I was stealing this food at this school. And I justified and say because my family was hungry and I needed to feed the neighbors. Well, them people watched me for 3 years before them people let me go out of that school. They watched me for 3 years before they say, you got to go. Sure did. And then my higher power took me. The literature talks about the big picture. See, I didn't see the big picture, I acknowledge. I didn't see the big picture, right? So the big picture was that my higher power was finna get ready to take me on a job where I was finna get ready to run a $100,000 business. Right? Had no idea. Had no idea. Didn't have no idea why he was trying to remove that defect and I was trying to hold on to it and justify and rationalize it. Right? So I'm talking about the hope in this process. How we do get better in this process. Just don't use. Get a sponsor. Go to a meeting and keep going to a meeting. That's my safe place. When all hell breaking loose, get where I'm going to be at, enemy. Whether it's on virtual or in person. See, I don't let people make me feel bad about virtual. Oh, well, that ain't what your recovery look like. Oh, well, Batman smell, Robin went to jail. I don't care. That's what my recovery look like because I work. I have to go to work because y'all told me to be a productive member of society. Y'all told me don't hold no more. That's what you told me, right? Because y'all told me that I'm going to get uncomfortable with that stuff in that step working process, and I did, right? So now I got to be fully self-supporting through my own contributions, right? And so before I get ready to leave, I just want to say that this weekend, I know that we're going to hear a message of hope. And I believe what the liturgist says when the liturgist say the spirit and the energy that can be felt in our rooms. That at every meeting that we go to, we're going to feel the spirit and the energy in the room. And I'm going to say this. The liturgist also talks about is how we show up at a meeting. Are we showing up teachable, open-minded? Willing? Are we green? Or do we know it all? So I show up. It all depends on how I show up. I came to get something this weekend. I came to be restored this weekend. You know? And so I'm real, real grateful. And I'm going to say this, and I promise I'm going to be quiet. On page 57 in the basic text, it says that we learn how to adapt our life to the program. Not the program to our life. So I can tell you that today, I am adapting. ING mean continuation. I will never stop doing this. Adapting my life to the program. Hey, family. My name is Tanya T. My clean date is 1/23/1997. My home group is alive and kicking in Houston, Texas. Let's keep hope alive in 2025. Thank y'all for letting me share.